Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Score! James Fegan.
Yes, James.
James Fegan's got some branding on his laptop, making sure everybody knows that he's joined The Athletic.
Can never get too much exposure.
On Twitter at JR Fegan.
I can anticipate this question is probably way too early, but
excellent. Too soon. Too soon.
Asking the questions to get the answers you need.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendrick?
If I'd known that, I'd know that. I'd check the rule. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
James Fegan with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
The White Sox have the last day off that they're going to have for a while.
Is it 31 games in 31 days or something like that?
I thought I saw 21 games in 20 days, so the depth will be tested. Their sore legs will continue to be tested. James Fegan joins us to talk White Sox. He's at Twitter at JR Fegan. He's on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. James, hi.
Looking forward to August 29th, I guess.
Okay, good. Then you can get some rest and some time away from the Chicago White Sox. But until then, you're in charge of them. So we have questions, James. The piece that you wrote on Tim Anderson, Tim obviously will be suspended for the first game of that doubleheader tomorrow. What's he said and what have people said about why we aren't seeing the best offensive version of him?
He hasn't said a whole lot. Generally, I mean, I talked to Joe McEwing last month about it, and he kind of pointed to Tim not really being as grounded in his legs as he was beforehand, before the injury, and that leading to a lot of kind of arms-heavy swings that led to him kind of pulling ground balls a lot and making more easy outs than we're typically used to him seeing. And then definitely this last weekend in Texas was a lot of just kind of off-balance swinging that really reminded me of the end of 2020. And so when I kind of put that idea to Frank Menachino this weekend, he kind of conferred that it was something similar to that, of just kind of him pressing a little too much or trying to kind of swing his way out of the funk he's feeling and not really having to kind of stay inside the baseball mentality he's usually had. Now, the reason I bring that up is because he kind of, you know, semi-famously pulled himself out of that in a single off day of batting cage work and then working on against live pitching. So it makes me think that maybe the suspension, if it could be well-timed, is probably a good time because it allows him to maybe step back and do some of that work rather than just trying to fix everything in a game all the time, which is pretty hard to do.
You also did a dive into Dylan Cease, and my partner was out here scaring people talking about Dylan Cease. What's made the transition from great talent to now, I think you can say, great pitcher with Dylan Cease? Well, what do you think has been key there?
I mean, I think the slider turning from like a plus pitch to like maybe the best pitch in baseball probably can't be undersold. That's usually like a pretty useful dynamic to have. I would say like the mechanical overhauls that they made last season to, you know, have his fastball where he could just kind of establish in the zone, that we could sort of the writing action that it has where he can, you know, really
every hitter coming up has the idea that they have to cover 98 with Ryan on the letters, not that it's just going to be something he's going to fall behind with 2-0 and then, you know, groove them something at some point. I think it's pretty big. Even last season, that pitch was getting hammered to a degree, but, you know, there's something to be said for the kind of old school thing of, you know, he's confident now, or he's really kind of based on what he's doing, his plan, and he's not thinking about mechanics anymore, and he's not thinking about all the fixes that he's doing. You know, he's a finished product, quote unquote, but he's also not really thinking about things he needs to fix, or, you know, super in his head about cues that need to be right for his pitch to go where he wanted to anymore. That's kind of behind him, and it allows him to kind of just compete a little bit.
So over the weekend, we saw a quote from Jose Abreu, and I apologize if you originally got or tweeted the quote. It all sort of got subsumed in my timeline. But I wasn't sure quite what to make of it, and I give a lot of latitude to these guys who speak through interpreters because so much can be lost in that game of telephone. But he sounded, when asked about effort, like he said, "I play as hard as I can, and that's all I can control," or something to that effect. Did it mean more than it seemed that it seemed heavier, somewhat ominous? Was it that, or was that just him answering a question honestly about his own approach?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly how he took the question because it's, you know, through an interpreter. Is he responding because he's, you know, we're talking to him, and, you know, the way he does interviews, you know, we kind of talk to him maybe once or twice a month, maybe a little bit often. So the fact that he was like stood up at his locker and was like, "Let's talk to this," because he felt like he needed to address after the, you know, 2-hit shutout, I thought was kind of already a little telling as it is. But it's still hard to say that this was like some call out of, you know, the rest of the roster, or more just him saying like, "Hey, all I can say is like I'm trying." Because generally the stance of the team has been like, you know, the results are bad, you know. AJ Pollock said something similar to this. Like, I feel like we've had plenty of games where it just looks absolutely horrible and we look flat, but I felt like our approach is fine, and, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work.
Go ahead.
He said kind of quotes like that before that, you know, seem to be a bit more pointed when you listen to it. They certainly aren't delivered with, like, this big call-out tone. You know, something I would say is that this isn't really a young team. Maybe this was kind of hitting home to me after, like, multiple guys celebrated 10 years of service time this weekend, but this is kind of like a lot of veteran guys who kind of need to be accountable for their own more than it's going to be, you know, Abreu calling her out or leading everybody. And, you know, this is Luis Robert's third season. This is Eloy Menes' fourth season. The guy with the least service time on the roster for much of the year is Tanner Banks, and that dude's 30. Like, it's not really like this team that needs to have like a senior guy like Abreu, like, tell them when to show up on time and what to do or whether to run hard. They kind of need to handle themselves.
Okay, so you've covered baseball for a minute now. We talk a lot. Fans talk about this all the time. We hear about Jose Abreu leadership, like, by doing, like, follow me, do what I do. What's real? What do you consider real about leadership in a baseball clubhouse?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think it's unique to the group. I think Jose Abreu does as good of a job of, you know, leading by example as he can, and, you know, guys are either going to engage that to some level if they want to or not. Definitely post game this weekend, you see him like talking with Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert about their at bats after the game. But I don't think that's kind of like a scolding or leading them by the hand type of way. I think that's just them, you know, decompressing after games or with Mancada involved as well. Something's obviously up with this team because they're not been consistent. I think their results allow you to kind of question, you know, how organized or, you know, what their approach is or, you know, how locked in they are on a day-to-day basis in a way that I think they're all acknowledging at this point that it just hasn't been very consistent. So, but I can't really necessarily say, I'd just be kind of, there'd be a level of speculation for me to say there's a vacuum of leadership or, you know, they're flat today and they're not trying. The results drive questions because they're not there, but I can't say like there's this level of like discord where you can point your finger at why things aren't happening.
No, I actually am more encouraged with your answer, partially because, James, like when we discuss it, like we're talking about, do those guys do that? Like, is there a mentality of staying after and just talking ball? Like, not even necessarily like breaking down tape or anything like that, but are guys doing it? And hearing that Jose Abreu is doing some of that with those guys actually makes me feel better.
Well, I mean, a notable thing you could say is, like, obviously this team's been a lot better at the road. You see those conversations happening a lot more on the road, whereas at home, you know, the game ends and everybody, like, clears out pretty quickly and goes home, whereas on the road, they're waiting for the first or second bus. They're kind of gathering together. They're talking together a lot more because that's kind of the nature of how that's structured. So maybe that's something you look at for why this has not been repeated when they're at home, because there's not the same kind of environment.
If I were to tell you the White Sox have a player who in the second half of the season, it's only 16 games, but per Fangraphs splits, in the second half of the season is batting .298, on base .377, slugging .468, with a weighted runs created plus of a whopping .144, how many guesses would it take for you to tell me who that is?
This is going to be humiliating, isn't it? I mean, it could be Aloy, right?
It's not. I also will tell you that his first half walk percentage was 5.1%. Last 16 games, it's 11.3. His strikeout percentage is down from 21.3 to 17. Don't look now. That's AJ Pollock.
I was not going to get that. I knew Josh Harrison had been good since June, but that didn't seem quite right for those numbers either. I think Sebi Zavala's kind of cooled off. I wasn't going to get that. But yeah, that's interesting because, you know, the numbers would tell you, like, it's August and they're still not right, and there's such extreme splits where he hasn't been good against right-handers. You know, it kind of instructing you to maybe back away from him and saying, like, you know, despite the track record, it's just not happening. But he's continued to be thrown at opportunities. So if that's the way things are turning for him, I imagine they'd embrace it a little bit since they're already so stretched for, you know, capable corner outfield defense as is. But yeah, that surprised even me.
Well,
I'd take a loss there.
James, you saw me fighting with people about Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech on Twitter on Saturday. With Kopech, is there a thread to the games where he struggles? And it's pointed out by both broadcast teams on Saturday of how intense he was and that he was sweating through his uniform and it was visible. Is that a game that can be chalked up to him maybe being a little bit more amped than he would want to be?
He would say so. I mean, I asked him about that after the game. Like, you know, I've made the drive from the Dallas-Fort Worth airport to Kopech's house, and it's not that long. So he had family and friends in the building. He said he was probably pressing a little bit too hard. I would defend that Kopech and Giolito are 1 and 2 for just, like, the champions of sitting on the White Sox roster. So I don't know how much to read into that specifically for both of them, because they're going to do that no matter what. But, yeah, he definitely said that he was maybe pressing a little bit on Saturday.
Is there any effort to have him work faster, or is his process just what his process is? Because it's so laborious. There's just the time it takes for his power bar to reload every time. It just I know it's a tough watch, and maybe it's just me complaining, but I wonder if there's been an effort to say, hey, have a plan, get the ball, get on there, recharge yourself, and fire that thing.
I would imagine that it got a little bit waylaid by his knee, and it's like, well, you know, throw the ball when you're feeling right type of mentality. I mean, it definitely seems like everything was a little bit thrown off by that, and that for a long period of time he was grinding through, that they feel like they really only got him out of that in the last couple of bullpen sessions where he's not kind of trying to get his knee feeling right every time he throws. So, I think it's a bit more of a long-term goal. It's a bit more like when he's feeling good and when he's more consistent mechanically, that's probably going to be something he'll do a bit more. But I don't know if they can just make him work fast in the hopes that it'll make him right, or that it's more the idea if we get him right, he will work faster.
Now that Lenin Sosa is back with the White Sox, that's my question. How long is he back with the White Sox?
I am mentally preparing myself for the move where between the doubleheader, they option him, they activate Ronaldo Lopez, and Tim Anderson to the starting lineup, and that's the end of that. because Tony really didn't promise anything more than just his middle infield coverage until Tim Anderson's off suspension.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, now that Leury's back, we're gonna, you know, just see those at bats that
he had good at bats and had himself a nice time, which means he'll probably be batting leadoff. It'll be totally fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
At least Pollock could bat leadoff now. You show what he can do.
See, we're coming up with solutions, James, and that's why we like to bring you onto the show. Sir, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, as always.
That's James Fegan. Next up, the White Sox are chasing had a bad day, and I don't know if they deserve to. And Rocco Baldelli was really, really, really unhappy, and I think he's got a case.
Yep. I'll take it, though.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I'm mad. I'm angry.
Well, somebody is, and you cut the last part off of that.
The
best part about that quote, I mean, do we have the actual real?
You want me to play this right now? We got Ryan standing right behind me.
It's a classic Terry Bors cut. Yes.
Hello, Porth. Good to see Porth in the building.
It is Non back for the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, a little bit. All right, play it.
I'm mad. I'm angry. I can prove it. I have an erection. I'm mad at all of you.
There. That's the cut. That's the piece of tape. And Rocco Baldelli was certainly that, because the Manfred man was thrown out at the plate, and then
it was Whit Merrifield.
And then upon review, it was
a rules violation of the catcher violation for blocking the plate, even though the throw
took
him right to where he was standing.
And Rocco, we're going to just let, it was at Bally Sports Midwest, is going to take you through this.
After review, the call on the field is overturned.
A violation by the catcher, I think, is what Alan Porter said, and Rocco Baldelli is livid and is going to be out of this game. Maybe it already happened. I wasn't looking at the moment, but the run is going to score, and I'm sure Baldelli is saying he's got a right to be there if he's catching
yes.
the ball. Didn't give Merrifield an opportunity to get to the plate. The call is overturned, and the Blue Jays have the lead.
And after his manager's done arguing, they have to go back out on the field.
That play has not been called since the beginning of replay more than a couple of times. In all of baseball, the thousands and thousands of games and plays at home where the catcher actually does block the plate over and over and over again, that play has virtually never been called. And for someone to step in that situation and ultimately make a decision that was blocking the plate, that's beyond embarrassing for our game, for all the players out there on both sides of the field working their ass off for the entire game. It's completely unacceptable. I can't even believe I'm sitting here talking to you guys about this right now. It's one of the worst moments I think we've seen of umpiring in any game I've ever been a part of in baseball. And I think it was pathetic what just played out. And I could go on and on and on about this. The umpires on the field have nothing to do with it. They made a play on the field, which was the right call, which every person in all of baseball, including the umpires, know is the proper call. And someone in New York decided that that was worthy of being overturned.
I'm with Rocco on this one. I mean, I'm happy it didn't work out for him, but I'm with him. This was the game-winning run, too. So this wasn't some run that happens early on in a game and that you could overcome. This was the game winner. And he was on the field for a very long time talking about it. And he's right. I think it's a bad rules interpretation by New York. And the umpires that are there can't do anything about it. They can't. And so he's yelling at them. And they're like, what do you want us to do?
We're here. They're there.
We called it your way.
Right.
We got overturned too. May I just say, I am so happy. Can you load up the cut of the play again? And I'll explain.
And by the way, the play is Toronto Sportsnet Dan Schulman on the call. The Baldelli cut was from Bally North.
So, Mike, you got it again? Run it again.
After review, the call on the field is overturned.
Stop. I'm so happy that baseball has mandated this. I'm so happy that for years, for decades, as consumers of baseball, we have had to sit there and go, what just happened? And the broadcasters have had to sit there and send someone to go get the information.
Get a pool reporter after the game.
Yep. Right. And now here's what it is. It's bad, but at least we are explaining it to the crowd. And I love the reaction. I love being able to hear the reaction just like you would at a football game or a basketball
game. And I actually think the umpires, not having done it, not having had it as part of their professional job, they've done a pretty good job of it. The worst are hockey officials.
They never know when their mics are off.
But just the way they, that whole thing.
The guy had it hit his stick. And it's a
good goal.
We have a player who was not in the crease. And then in the crease, off of the guy from Vancouver, no goal.
Greasy goal.
Right? It's just like, come on, man.
You're right. The umpires.
Put it together. Spit it out.
They've done a good job of adapting to the new technology. They've done a good job of being like, all right, yeah, you put a microphone on, because we all knew it was going to be this easy.
Yeah.
And this is all, if you were using the technology to go check with New York in the first place, why not just put a wireless mic or a wired mic up and have these guys explain what's going on? So in one way, the technology has been great. In another way, I don't know how they came to that interpretation of the rule. I think it's just a really bad interpretation of the rule.
I believe Rocco Baldelli at one point used the word chicken bleep.
I would agree with him.
Mm-hmm. But hey, you're a White Sox fan. You take it. And maybe it comes down to that one game and that one outcome.
That's like, I feel bad for him, but I kind of smiled. You know,
hey,
I was grocery shopping at the time, and because the White Sox had the game in hand, I'm like, oh, I'll go do some grocery shopping. So I'm grocery shopping, and I'm listening to the Twins game because I'm a glutton for punishment. And I was like, got your ass, Rocco. Take that. Two games back. Here comes the South Side Nine. And until probably tomorrow, and then I'll be upset because they're going to split this doubleheader with the Royals.
Of course they will. One way or another, they'll split it, right?
Someone's going to throw a fastball to Salvador Perez. He's going to hit it 500 feet.
How many times does Steve Stone note how hard Salvador Perez plays?
Texters are on it. I'm glad that we brought it up as a show. As a show, we kept pointing out, have you noticed? Like, Dan and I would be like, did you see it last night? Remember when Salvador Perez was up and he was talking about how hard he ran? Or, hey, when did Stoney say the nice thing about Jose Abreu? Oh, when Eloy was in the box, or when Moncada was in the box.
There's someone who hustles all the time. For all you kids out there, you know what makes you better at baseball? Trying. Like this guy.
Would you like to know what a leader looks like? It looks like Jose Abreu. Why? Because he runs to first base. So when you're watching the White Sox game tomorrow, or White Sox games tomorrow, watch for that. Watch for when Steve decides to point that out, that someone's running hard, and he's been real good about it. Was Reyes. He's talked about Reyes. He's talked about Perez. See what player from the other team he points to and goes, that guy's trying hard.
Next up, we're going to play a game brought to you by the Philadelphia Phillies marketing department. It's called Let's Celebrate a Scumbag. Next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I didn't learn anything about myself.
Minor transaction breaking news of sorts. Sahadev Sharma says, according to multiple sources, Cubs are adding outfielder Franmil Reyes, the Franimal. He was DFA'd by Cleveland last week. He's owed $1.5 million rest of the season, ARB eligible this winter. Heard great things about him as a clubhouse guy, and prior to this year, he'd put up big power numbers. Yeah, he's a big hulking man. He's 6'5 and 270 pounds, and he's just fearsome looking in the box. He just can't hit anymore.
In 2021, he hit 30 home runs, and he, in 2019, hit 37. So this is a guy with some pop in his bat. He's not too old. He's only played, what, five seasons? He's 27. That's a good risk take.
That is absolutely the kind of thing for a free flyer on a guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe you know something about the potential for a change of scenery. Go ahead and see if he can rake a little bit.
Maybe there's something that your baseball people have told you that they can see and like, oh, you know what? We might be able to fix that.
And who are they using a roster spot on, really? Like in the 40-man?
I mean, Zach McKinstry!
Well, come on.
Well, I don't know. It's fine.
That's fine. So the Philadelphia Phillies, for some reason, decided to honor Pete Rose. I have no idea why. And as tomorrow's guest, Craig Calcaterra, is going to tell us, like he talked about in his newsletter today, he said, this is like deciding to honor Bill Cosby.
Yep.
Pete Rose is in a 2017 deposition admitted that he raped a 14-year-old. It's not in question.
Also, his defense was that he thought she was 16.
And it happened. It is unquestioned that it happened. He testified to it. He swore to it under oath that it happened. And he was asked about it by a reporter. And he said, it was 55 years ago, babe. So not only was he grossly dismissive of his own admission of statutory rape, they put a microphone in front of him on the broadcast. And this is what they got.
Tony, congratulations. What did you hit? And Tony says, yo, I hit a high fastball. And Joe didn't know what to say. Joe said, no.
That's looped out to right field.
You change the subject real quick on that loop out to right field.
I'm just describing the action.
Pretty sure we don't have a 7-second delay, so.
Ooh.
Where's Nicholas Castellanos when you need him?
What are you doing, man?
I think there are a lot of questions about some choices that were made there.
Why? Why did they feel they had to bring him around and do all this?
I don't know. But it was a terrible decision. And then it was compounded with a terrible decision to put him on the air.
Oof.
So, yeah. You know what's not a terrible decision, though?
I like what you did there. What?
Putting Parkins and Spiegel on the air. They're going to join us next.
And that is leadership.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.